Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, and welcome to Strategies of Success. Strategies. There's always multiple strategies. If somebody can come up with one answer to every one of life's problems, then I am game to listen. But the reality is, that's not the case. The reality is, there's no such thing as an overnight success either. The reality is that we don't have immediate answers. And the other portion of reality is there really is no immediate gratification. There's levels of gratification as we go through our process, as we grow our business, as we develop, most importantly, as people. Every step of the way should be gratifying in some respect, even if it's a quote-unquote less than desired outcome. Because it's those challenges that we get through. It's those little steps that we take. It's those things that actually truly make us who we are today and help us, of course, grow to who we want to continue to become in tomorrow. Our guest today lived through that entire process throughout his entire career, and his entire career continues to go. It's evolved, and it's evolved in a number of different ways, but there has been one thing that is consistent in his approach is that he knew where he wanted to go, and he also knew never to give up, and he's going to talk about that in a lot more detail than I'm going to. So who are we talking to? We are talking to a gentleman who loves to get on stage to help people understand what they should be doing. We are talking to a gentleman that was kind enough, and I'm going to use that word, kind enough, to share his story because it is an inspiring story and one that should be read by everybody. And we are talking, of course, to Henry Melzani. Dr. Henry Melzani. And that whole story of becoming a doctor was a process in and of itself, too, and a great story to tell. Henry, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your story in so many different ways.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. So becoming a doctor and this whole process of going through school and finding the career that you wanted to be on the whole way through was a story. Can you give us a little background on that whole thing?
Well, I grew up in a large Italian family, loving food, and lived across from the street from a pharmacy where my parents sent me once a month to get a few staples for them. And seeing that pharmacist behind the counter kind of looked pretty cool. And so that was my first step in the medical field. I initially started in pharmacy school in Fordham, and during school, I noticed people who were trying to get into medical school were always stressed out, upset, because they had to get A's. And mine was, my grade average was never that high. So I continued my pharmacy school kind of with medicine or helping people in the background and went through pharmacy school and got involved with looking into how drugs affected people's minds and how substance abuse was becoming a problem, and met some people and worked with a pharmacist who was involved in this. So eventually I continued working in pharmacy, worked with substance abuse, and decided to go further into pharmacy and medicine and went for a master's degree in pharmacology, how drugs worked. And after pursuing that for a couple of years, being in a lab, you know, by yourself with just mice and rats didn't appeal to me. So I finished my master's kind of with a thought that maybe this would help me possibly get into medical school if I ever really decided that's what I wanted to do. And so I went to work in a hospital as a hospital pharmacist to be near doctors, maybe to get some more experience and see how they worked, and started working with the methadone program. And with this program, the physicians who were in charge kind of retired and left. And there was no one around who really understood the drugs. And I had a little more background than most, so they put me in charge of dosing the patients. and prescribing under the doctor's auspices the methadone for their daily dose. Well, after a while, I started to sink in. I had a beeper from the hospital, and I was prescribing or ordering dosages for these people to take, that what I needed was a license so I could do this on my own. So I applied to medical school and switched hospitals to get to the medical school pharmacy that was in the hospital next to it. I tried, by this time I had tried 40 letters of recommendation or 40 letters of application and had 40 rejections, each one telling me I was a great guy, they wished me well, I was going to do well in my careers, but they wouldn't accept me. Well, I transferred hospitals because I didn't want to give up. And I can fully see in my life that there are higher powers, God, Buddha, some other thing there, through the fact of a person pursuing what they want to do, that they want to keep on going and keep on going and not stop while they pursue their dreams, that things get put in your place to help you. Well, after my 40th rejection, the head of anesthesiology came to me and said, Henry, I understand you're trying to get to medical school. One of my anesthesiologists is interviewing for the Philippines. Are you interested? I said, I'm going to be a doctor. I filled out an application, sent it in. He told me about 2 months later, call the dean. I said, really? In the Philippines? He said, yes. So, unbeknownst to me, the school was run by two physicians, a husband and wife. The husband had left deanship to go into politics. His wife now became the dean. She was the chairman of the Department of Pharmacology. Lucky for me.
Right.
I finally got her, and she told me, I will get your file. I said, oh, that's very nice of you. She got the file. She looked at my file, and I could hear in the intonation in her voice, oh, Henry, you're 28 years old. Most of the kids in the freshman class were 18.
Right.
Oh, Henry,
that's
you're
a
married.
Challenge.
Okay. Oh, Henry, you have a six-month-old daughter. I said, yes. She was, this wasn't going my way, I thought. Then the next thing out of her mouth was, Henry, you have a master's in pharmacology. Do you know how to use a Beckman spectrophotofluorometer? I said, absolutely. That's what I use for my master's degree. She said, okay, you'll hear from us in a week. And I did. So that was kind of something that let me know that this was where I was supposed to go and what I was supposed to do. It was,
But it's something that came to you for the right reasons. And, I mean, we could certainly look at this thing, from the spiritual side of things, that law of attraction. But the idea, as with so many people, is that we need to keep first and foremost in front of us and in front of others what our love is, what our passion is, what our true desire is. And by you doing
Absolutely.
That, other people were able to see that. And because they saw that, they knew of somebody. You mentioned about you got lucky, and I heard that sarcasm in your voice. luck. Do people get lucky? And let me ask you that question. Do people get lucky, or do they create
no.
the luck?
Yes. People don't get lucky.
Yeah, right.
They put themselves in a place where things can happen for them. Had I kept my job, my first job in the hospital, not moved, not gone to the dean, the luck is that I put myself in the position for luck to happen, and the luck part of it was I had used a Beckman spectrophotofluorometer in my master's, and they had one, and no one knew how to use it. So that was kind of luck or fate. I had nothing to do with that.
But it was also But Henry, you know something, and I'll disagree with you, but in some respects you did. Nobody knew how to use it, but you had the desire to go in and use it and even pronounce it. I was, you know, I'm glad you said it and I didn't have to, you know, and that kind of thing. But isn't that part of everything too? By understanding what direction you want to go in, that means you're willing to take chances and you're willing to go and take on new roles and responsibilities that, and I'm going to say you may not be ready for, and I'm sure that wasn't the case, but when you started running the department where you were guiding, we'll say, in the pharmacy. I mean, you know, what was your initial reaction? Were you ready for that or were you ready for the challenge of that? And there's a difference.
Well, yes, I was ready because ever since like 3 years before, I had read every single article, literature on addiction, substance abuse, methadone maintenance. And probably for the first 6 months, I was watching the people, seeing their dosages. Yeah. We also had to ask them how much they were using. And I got to know people, and working with addicts is kind of difficult. You kind of know they lie all the time. So you have to get a sense of what they're saying and how they're saying it. So I felt very comfortable, you know, being self-educated in this and comfortable in prescribing it and then having it signed off by the new physicians until I explained to them how to use it. But it was all self-education, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was too ignorant or too naive to know that I should be worried. I don't know if I could say that, but
I don't know. But I understand. But sometimes, look, I mean, sometimes we do need to move forward. And everything was prescribed with the doctor overseeing everything. So I mean, you know, we're all good, you know, in that respect. But you are taking on a different role, and it's an interesting role because you're playing both sides there. You have to understand what the needs of the patient are, the needs of the addict, where they're coming from. Understand that one too, and that, you know, and back on the doctor side, so you probably picked up some negotiation skills along the way too, but certainly people skills, understanding body language, how people use their voice when they're know exactly what they're going to say, or perhaps when they're kind of hoping that an idea flies that may not be 100% the truth.
Absolutely. And it's kind of surprises me in a way in that I've always considered myself a shy, reserved kind of person. And in my residency, one of the chairmen of the department said I was reticent. And I kind of been quiet. And when I look back and I say, holy smokes, I really did those things. It amazes me. Just stepping outside of yourself.
But that also inspires other people too. So you like to give, and you give presentations at different venues, high school students?
I've given presentations to high school students, college students, much to the chagrin of my daughters. Spoken about sex and drugs to their high school, to each one's college, kind of embarrassed them. But I guess, I enjoy talking to kids because young children, especially nowadays, it's kind of two focuses I have in my life. One is adult or senior nutritional and health education, and the other is addiction prevention early. I spent 40 years working in drug treatment, and the recidivism rate is about 85%, the amount of people that continue to use. So that's very disheartening. But the way I see, the best way to work at this is work with preventing people dying, which I'm on a number of committees for that, to prevent heroin deaths, but also to educate the young kids how to work with and handle and understand drugs. Our society now is really treating kids and letting them out in the public, so to speak, when they go to high school. I mean, they're driven and brought to every play date and
right.
exercise
That's exactly
program.
What I was thinking.
And so they're not really thinking on their own. They're not allowed out of their house. And when they have a play date, there's adults around with adult supervision. Don't talk to anybody you don't know. So they're not developing a sense of how to handle themselves out of their peers or their parents' vision. And what's
right.
happening in
yeah.
colleges nowadays, the college counselors that I've spoken to say, we're handed children who come into our office saying, I broke up with my girlfriend. What do I do? My credit card payment is delayed. I don't know. They don't really know how to handle life, and they become disconnected because they're scared. And the way we get some gratification is because we bond with certain things. These kids haven't learned to bond and to be resilient. You know, so what do? They bond with the drug culture, and then it becomes addiction. And addiction is not logical. Addiction is something that starts out with a conclusion. That's why it's not logical. These people get involved with it, and they start out with this conclusion, and then they build a case for the use of the drugs. And it makes it very hard to reach these people because their mind is set. To my thinking, we need to reach the very young children. And the hardest thing is to get parents to come in to discuss this because all their children are great and they don't do anything wrong, which, of course, is not true. But they don't come to meetings. I've spent hours waiting in the library for people to come to discuss with a physician and a psychologist about just to discuss, not even to lecture. And no one comes. So that's sort of disheartening, but that's my focus, is to get in to talk to PTAs. I'm scheduled to meet with the PTA seniors in the school, the presidents, to get time to speak to them, to speak to their people in the different grade schools, that we should be talking to kids. You know, I look at addiction or drugs similarly to water and fire. All three things can kill you, hurt you, or are helpful or are needed. Now, with fire, we need it to cook, to live, to heat things. We teach kids, stay away from fire, be careful, use it cautiously. Water, the same thing. We teach them how to swim, be careful, how to protect themselves. With drugs, we tell them nothing. Stay away. Don't even think about it. Don't talk about it. Don't touch that. Don't look at those medicines. It's all bad.
Right, which and if you're a marketing person, as soon as you say something's really bad, it piques one's curiosity.
Absolutely.
That certainly is not a good thing. So, and I was thinking about that when you mentioned, like, addiction, and I'm thinking through a number of situations where being – addicted to somebody, and maybe we could change that word a little bit, really focused on something, is not necessarily a bad thing. So I like the analogy, you know, with the water, you know, the water and fire and stuff like that. You know, if we don't have any true passion about something, then you're just kind of waddling through life, and there's no answer there. But, I mean, and working with the kids at a younger age to help them along the way to get them to focus or belong to something seems to make a lot of sense. But do you think that's really the crux of the whole thing, is that being accepted by your peers or being a part of a group, or is it just, you know, finding an escape where people become more addicted? And it could be also, you know, I'm thinking like the joining of different groups or gangs and things like that. You know, it's just a desire to be accepted that is pushing so many people in the wrong direction. And this probably goes beyond just regular, the younger age groups too. But, I mean, what is it?
Is it that need
to be accepted?
It's all those things. They look to be accepted. But you see, in our society today, they talk about a heroin crisis now because it's in the middle class and upper class people. Before, it was just the problem of lower socioeconomics. But now what's happening is because of the digital age, computers, cell phones, everybody has one. And this there's something called continuous partial attention. All kids have this continuous partial attention. People you can't talk to people for a long period of time. You can't give somebody a message that lasts very long because we're all used to this quick email type of talking. And what happens is this wealth of information that you can get and look up anything leads to a poverty of attention, which means kids aren't paying attention. They're focusing on when can I get to my phone? And depending what they're looking at, if they're looking at a group of people, if they're focusing on a group of people, and they're really stressed out with all this computers. And unfortunately, the part of our brain called the amygdala, which is the ancient part, tells us to be fearful of everything and to be negative. You know, it was okay when you walked in the woods and a lion came up. Okay, it worked good then. Now, when people wake up in the morning, everything stresses them. I have to go to work. I have to, buy this. I have to pay for that. The kids have to go here, or I have to meet this girl. So they're always stressed out. So they're looking for an out. They're looking for a way to relax. And unfortunately, our food industry is helping these kids to develop addiction. What I mean by that is that kids are given a breakfast of Fruity Pebbles with skim milk and a glass of orange juice, mostly all sugar. So it's almost like a hit of cocaine. All this sugar increases their dopamine, and that is something that they get used to all the time. It's sort of a high. They feel good. And then they crash when they get into school around 10:30. So they need more. And that's what addiction is. It's kind of a food, industry, government. It's all about money. Yeah. The industry wants to sell more product.
Right. The golden question, I guess, with the whole thing is, and I understand that, we've got more people with all kinds of different diseases that I don't remember. I'm in my mid-50s, that I don't remember anything growing up, the peanut allergies amongst everything else, a lot of these IBD, IBS issues, that are there. And then obviously, the gangs, the drugs, all this stuff is just so much more. I couldn't tell you I disagree with you, that it's the foods that we eat, but it certainly is that whole lifestyle upon which we're going. And we also did the play dates, and that kind of thing, as opposed to just going down to the playground and see who's there. You just play with whoever is there, as opposed to arranging, absolutely everything. But so how do we change it? There you go. You've got 7 minutes left on left. How do we change the world? No, but Henry, how do we start? How do we start to turn this whole thing around? Where we're inspiring our kids to latch on, to become too addicted to something that's a positive, to give them more sense of self-control, where they're reliant upon themselves, where they can look in the mirror and understand that the community that they should belong to is themselves, and be comfortable there, and then move forward from that, and then be the one that leads the group where people come to that person because they are the one that is a positive one. They are the one that knows who they are. They are the one with a positive influence on everybody. And I guess, as you mentioned here, they're the ones who are starting off with a good, healthy breakfast.
Well, actually, there's one good thing that you and I and every adult person has to do. We have to be a good example. What do our kids see us do? Our kids see a lot of people still smoking, although they're cutting back. Our kids see parents come home, have a couple of drinks before dinner or a glass of wine later on. Our kids see us binge watching Netflix, everything is sort of an addictive purpose. You know, we sit there and watch it for hours. Are we getting up and exercising, showing our kids how we should do things, how our lifestyle should be? Because basically, I don't care what genetics you have. Genetics only account for 20% of what happens to us. So if a person says, my father was an addict, okay, fine, that's his genetics. But basically 80% of what happens is what you do and your lifestyle. So genetics is the gun, but your lifestyle is what pulls the trigger. And you can prevent anything by having the right lifestyle. The food industry puts in a lot of pesticides. So we have a lot of health and food problems with the sugar and with a number of other things. And we're an addictive society. We're in a hurry. We don't have delayed gratification. And that's how, and that's what you need to have, to develop your purpose and your passion. You have to prepare for it. You need persistence and you need resilience. The other thing is we have to let our kids fall down a little bit with our protection. If you do everything for the child and intercede at every time, the kids will never learn. And the last thing to do is to focus on applauding what a child does, not the best thing he does, because that's probably easy. We have to focus on applauding them for the thing they don't do so well, but that they're trying very hard to do.
Well, well presently, I agree. Go ahead, President.
Now, that's the message that I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, President, and that is, I think it's a great message, you know, to be delivering out there. And actually a very good point, too. It's like there are some things that we just have this natural ability to do, which is one thing, but it's that, and I'm much more focused on, you know, that process, you know, where you're learning from everything as you go. So to applaud a kid, applaud your friend, applaud a business partner, applaud somebody that you know for doing something that wasn't necessarily easy for them to do, but they did it. Yeah, and that is absolutely a great message to deliver. And maybe that was the case with the book. So you have a chapter inside this, and I'll definitely want to spend a little time here before we break off for today. But you were you're co-author of the book, The Silver Linings Book. First
Story
time
book.
Writing something? Was that
yes.
something that was
first
a
time.
Yeah. So
yes.
I mean that's a little
it
bit
was
of
something
doing
I had in my mind.
Ordinary.
Yes, I actually had gone to Hay House, which is a big publishing company, for a weekend to talk about publishing a book, and they kind of left me down in the dumps. They kind of told me, well, you need a platform, which means lots of Facebook people, lots of emails, lots of lecturing, lots of talks before they would do anything. So again, I was going in the right direction and met up with the right people.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's great a book like this. So can you just explain the concept of the book and why it just became very, very important for you to contribute to it?
The concept of the book is something that I like because it's kind of been what's going on in my life. The storybook linings, it's the storybook lining, the silver lining behind the troubled stories or the troubled life that people have and how they came through it and then evolved into something that they never thought they could. And there's so many, there's 18 different stories of various types of stories. So this is a kind of book that would relate to a whole world of people, all different types, young, old. It's a great read because someone is going to find their problem in one of these stories and may help to figure out how they're going to get through it, no matter what it is. And that's what
that
drew
great.
Me to this.
Yeah, I think these books are great. You know, as a guy that stands up on stage, it's not so much as the facts that people remember, it's the stories that people remember. And it is the stories that people get inspired by. You have a phenomenal story. You know, the fact that you persevered the whole way through, you created your own luck as it went, and you're willing to do whatever was necessary to achieve your goal. So kudos to you, Henry. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the time. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you. Yeah. All right, so folks, we've been talking to Henry Balzani, and, you know, I love these kind of conversations. Just like Henry really wanted to contribute to that book, and he really wanted to become a doctor, and he made luck happen. He made things happen for himself. He persevered. He never gave up. He knew where he wanted to go. And by me sharing those kinds of stories, you know, through this program, by you reading books like the Silver Lining Storybook and other books that give people a chance to talk about what they've been through in order to inspire you, for you to go on, you should be doing this. And look, not everything in life is easy to do. Applaud somebody. That is a great idea. Applaud somebody that you know struggled to achieve something. That is a phenomenal compliment that you could give somebody. Absolutely phenomenal. And it shows that you care. And that's something that we should all be doing so much more so of. And maybe if we all cared that much more about everybody else in this world, in our community, in our family, in our business life, that this whole thing would be so much better. We'd all be happier. We'd all be less addicted to the wrong things. We would all be accomplishing that much more. And we'd all be enjoying life even to a greater extent than we currently are. My name is Brian Cohen. This has been Strategies of Success. Figure out your strategy and never, ever, ever give up. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time on Strategies of Success.